Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. Every Saturday night, the Freak Show happens right here on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and more. Please visit our website, SaturdayNightFreakShow.blogspot.com, where you can order tonight's movie from Amazon. Follow the links on our website, and it'll kick a little something back to the Freak Show, because we're trying to upgrade our audio equipment. You don't like the buzz. We don't like the buzz. Let's get rid of the buzz. Together, shall we? Together, we can make it happen. You're listening to the internet radio superstars, including
Brent,
Jenny,
founding member Tom Key for a guest appearance,
Travis,
Sean,
and I guess that leaves me. I'm Colin, and I picked tonight's movie, Videodrome, from the year 1983, directed by David Cronenberg, Canadian fellow.
Was it about the flesh?
Just a good Canadian fellow.
No, Videodrome's about a guy named Max Wren who loves his TV. Loves his TV, if you get my meaning. And then it brainwashes him, turns him into an assassin. Fair enough? Is that a synopsis of what we just watched?
There's so much more within that.
Well, in a nutshell, it's really about, like, okay, Videodrome is a type of, almost like a hypnosis programming, but they know that to open up your neurons or whatever in your brain, it only reacts to violence. That's why, but they need to try to find a way. How do you take just this plain violent thing? Because Videodrome is that this.
It's like a hidden signal on a carrier.
What we believe at first is a hidden signal that these guys hack into. So, yeah, there's just the plain violent video that opens your neurons. So they need they need Max, who's a programmer for Channel 83 or whatever, for...
Yeah, he looks Civic TV. It's like a public broadcast channel. Or no, it's like a cable channel.
Because he's, looking at porn.
He likes showing, Riscape. It's like, his own private
Risque
channel.
Asian wood dildos.
Yeah, he likes showing, weird programming anyway. So that's why Videodrome kind of...
Yeah, but Max isn't satisfied with just the softcore Asian porn videos.
Needs something a little hard.
Well, because they explain how, and this is kind of the way TV works, or any media really. The more you subject yourself to it, you just want more of it. You know, like horror movies, right? You start with a little gore, but I want more gore. I want more gore. Now you got movies that are all gore, no story, just because you just want it.
Well, it's kind of what, that is what he's...
And you're pushing the envelope. It's almost like you get bored with what you see. You get...
It's called desensitization.
Yeah, desensitizing yourself, so you're always going for something more extreme and more...
Well, is that something, but that also says something to, Max goes on a dual personal odyssey in this movie. One, there's something obviously within him where he's looking at softcore stuff at the beginning. Should I put this on my channel? And he's like, no, I want something that's tough. Something, that's harder than this. And it's like, Jesus, what kind of fucking guy is this?
Yeah, right? I want something harder than Asian wood dildos.
Yeah. So then he meets Debbie Harry. So this is his personal journey. And she's, what is she,
she's like a radio...
Radiotherapist?
Something like that.
Or talk show host. Mm-hmm. But she's got a kink to her. What's her name in this?
Nikki. Nikki, yeah.
She's into cutting...
Anything.
S&M. She's into S&M.
Pierce my ears.
Gets Max involved in this, kind of. You want to try some things?
Well, that's also that idea that you take the extremes you take from watching movies and television enter into your real life. You make your real life more extreme, matching your... Because, one thing they keep repeating in this is the whole... the retina of the mind. Television's the retina of the mind.
Of the mind's eye.
Yeah. Well, because
That's a cool idea.
Well, an actual... okay, this is something scientists actually have just been talking about in the past year, where the reason they say we dream is because when we dream, we're actually putting ourselves in situations. That way, you know, in the dream, that way when you actually, like...
Yeah, it's like...
You're
preparing yourself?
Yeah, you're preparing yourself for an eventuality, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how will I deal with this later? I've already dealt with it.
And TV is the same.
Creating your own deja vu.
Yeah, right, for sure. Yeah. And TV, they think, might act as the same way. But we're watching these extremely violent things, these very sexualized things, you know, because that's what sells, right? Sex and violence sells because it's the part of ourselves, or of our psyche, we don't tap into on a everyday basis. So that's why our entertainment... is what we, you know, we want that in our entertainment because that's our escapism, our fantasy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think if you don't tap into that, that's what creates, you know, repression and stuff like that. If, you know, that's why you watch horror movies and porno, because if you don't recognize that that is a part of your psyche, then you can, you know, have repressed bullshit and it can, you know, blow out in other weird ways. So yeah, the idea that that all these movies you watch enter into your real life to where sex has to become almost like a fucking, like a S&M situation or whatever, because all the crazy violence and shit is just upped and upped and upped in your fantasy world, so then you want to bring it over to your real life.
I'm reminded, too, of, like, there's a scene in, was it Scrooged? I want to say, where Bill Murray's character is constantly... like, he's a guy who supposedly, like, grew up watching TV all the time, and so he can't differentiate between his own memory and, like, memories that happen on television, which I see as, like, you know, Videodrome's, like, totally tapping into that, you know, what was it, like, at least 10 years prior, you know? It's kind of going in the same concept. And the other thing, this was made in 1983, and I can't help but thinking, like, this was made the same year as Halloween 3, right? This is another movie about how television can kill you. Television will warp your mind.
I was going to say, when was They Live?
88. Yeah. But it's funny that these filmmakers make these stories about, you know, how TV is bad for you, but they're making, you know, a filmed entertainment, you know? So it's still, you know, I mean, I know that they would probably consider it as, well, you know, I'm making a personal artistic statement, and TV is just kind of mass-produced, you know, stuff that kind of, you know, that you use to babysit your kids or, you know, to dull your senses in the after a hard day of work or something like that, right? That's the difference between cinema and the television that they're skewing.
Well, to me, this is really about also, it's about making people more susceptible to propaganda, right? If they could find a way to make video drones just susceptible or make everybody susceptible to Videodrome, that's why he says they can introduce any programming they want. You become the programming, right? That's why they make him an assassin at the end. You know, that's the whole point is, yeah, like you said, the mass produced media, but that's what you can use for, you know, any fucking message. The church, the cathode ray church, they're using it basically, I mean, not necessarily for propaganda, but the idea that, like, well, we can reintegrate all these homeless people, but if they watch TV, they can become more, you know, you have to become acquainted with the television world to live in the real world. Yeah, that was the idea. That
they make the idea a couple times that, like, real life is more real than real life, right? Or says something to that effect.
Yeah.
That it's like real life isn't even worth living unless it's on television.
Because really, we do, I mean, that's what, I mean, if you watch any television program, you can see what type of a political slant they have. And most people that either just don't think about things, they hear a political slant and they assume, well, since it's on television, you know, this must be a consensus between us all. We all think like this, so I better not either say anything against it or else I'll be going against society or blah, blah, blah. So it's very easy to introduce, you know, kind of a mass consciousness through.
Well, I think that's, I mean, those are the concepts that Cronenberg's going after in this. I mean, obviously he's taking it and putting it into a, like, science fiction parable, right? This is how you kind of get these ideas out, you know, in a kind of a non-threatening way. You're putting them out in the guise of a science fiction movie, but it's actually talking about probably, you know, things that are carry a lot more weight. This movie is famous, you know, for having all these, you know, crazy makeup effects also that Rick Baker did, you know, I mean, once you've seen it, you're like, wow, that's the movie in which a guy makes out with his television set. Debbie Harry's lips actually come out of a TV set, and Max is like caressing the screen, which is like this kind of, I mean, it's like a giant boob, right?
Yeah, it's breathing and it's all veiny.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was saying. It just needed some lube, right? And that's what I was wondering too. It's like that scene cuts, but I'm like, what kind of night did that guy have after the movie cut? Like, did this go all the way? We just didn't get to see him fuck his television. But I guess that's the conceit of the idea. Videodrome is a program. And this is what what you were talking about earlier. The idea of, having to, you know, experience something to prepare, like it's a boot camp for the psyche. Videodrome is the video arena. It's like the, you know, the Roman Colosseum, which was that same kind of thing. You would experience, you know, death, but, you know, not your own death. You're watching other people die. And then the French Grand Guignol, however you pronounce that, theater, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, and I'm rambling here, but that was... one of the things I've always thought that, like, horror movies, just movies in general, they are kind of like a boot camp for, you know, preparing for your own death in some way. You're watching scenarios, all the possible scenarios, and preparing yourself for, like, that final moment, you know? I lost the thread of that one. Where was I going back?
Can we talk a little bit about the effects? During that, like you were talking about him making out with the TV and how they pull that off. Cause it's a practical effect.
Yeah.
Like it's basically some sort of, I guess, what would you call it? Some sort of elastic,
the way that I understand it, was some kind of something that was used it was something used in dental appliances, right? It was very pliable. And there was a rear projection of a video screen on it, and then they were inflating it with compressed air to make it expand.
Oh, that's how they did
through the television. Wow. And then the actual TV was being puppeteered by some guy with a keyboard with little valves that were like blasting air into different parts of the thing to make it breathe and move.
It's very like every Cronenberg film has the thing in it, the prop that is part technical, part biological, part, you know, like he takes machines and makes them alive with I'm trying to think of it, like existence maybe.
The typewriter in Naked Lunch.
The typewriter.
Bioorganic, just talk about our almost like a parasitic existence between man and technology, and like showing how.
Well, even the way his characters talk about it, at one point a character goes into an eyeglass store and puts on, you know, some frames, right? And the guy comes up to him and is like, "That machinery is a little overwhelming for your face."
Yeah,
you know, just the fact that you would refer to eyeglasses as machinery is kind of, you know, it sounds alien when you hear it, right? Yeah. But he's talking about a merging of the technological and the biological.
Right.
I guess, right?
Yeah, without glasses, people, you know, all over wouldn't know what it's like to see. So it's like you're dependent on the technology. It's a part of your life now. Mm-hmm. That's like the first step of a cyborg. Was the eyeglass. You needed something outside of yourself to live your normal day life. You know, it's the first time technology.
Well, it's also modifying human evolution, right? Like, it's humankind through technology taking control of its own evolutionary path, you know, because you're modifying the body externally with technology.
Yeah, supposedly everything happened naturally, and this is the first time in history humans are taking it upon ourselves.
Yeah. That was the thread, actually, that I was going back to. Videodrome is a signal that's hidden in a carrier wave of a TV program that, as the viewer watches it, it creates a tumor in the brain, right? Which one of the characters describes as not just a tumor, it's a new organ. And the organ creates hallucinations. And I'm guessing, I don't know if you guys got this out of this, but I'm like, the ultimate end goal of the evil, you know, corporation or whatever company that's involved in the creation of this stuff is to change reality by having everyone watch this broadcast eventually, right? They're doing tests right now, but eventually everyone is going to see this and it is going to change our, you know, if you change everybody's perception of reality, reality changes.
Right? Kind of like the Congress.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that movie with Robin Wright Penn.
Where in the future, everybody has to, like, what, you live in, like, a cartoon world? Like, I mean, that reality is completely changed because they've just taken entertainment to that next step where entertainment's more important than your reality, or entertainment sets what reality is.
Mm-hmm. What's for what point? What purpose?
Yeah.
Well, because you can just to program people. The same way they made this character an assassin, if you want people, I mean, shit, mass control of mass of human. I mean, that's the ultimate step. I mean, like you said, if inventing glasses was the first time humans took it upon themselves to set their own evolutionary path, there's many episodes before where we've talked about eugenics. There's lots of movies that talk about eugenics. So when humans, like, on a mass scale, want to affect where society is moving. I mean, it's very hard to get everybody on one page, you know. That's why propaganda and hypnosis and all that shit can come into play, because you just need people to think one way, or at least if they don't think that way, not to say anything or feel like they can't impede on others, because no, this is the norm. I'm the one that's different, you know.
But is it like, I mean, I guess then, I mean, you can either see it as, you know, they're going to go and create like an army of, you know, of killers, basically, because that's what they do with James Woods' character, right? I mean, that they are going to go out and affect societal change by programming a bunch of killers.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, another possibility is that, you know, what, that they would...
I mean, I think that was in the case of James Wood, just the idea that, they introduced Max to, because what we do find out later is that it's not
spoiler warning.
Yeah, Jesus. It's not a broadcast that they're intercepting. They purposefully showed Max this to create, well, because they want his channel.
Yeah.
Since his channel is willing to play such hardcore stuff, and they need the violent angle to tap into so people's neurons will open up to the Videodrome. So it's like, well, if you won't go along with it, well, then they just program and we'll kill your partners. Mm-hmm. And what, they could probably just buy out the station then or whatever. You know?
Doesn't it seem like, I mean, after the first couple of videos, it gets very specific to Max, right? I mean, like,
well, how are his hallucinations?
Well, that's true. So it's all,
all his hallucinations are his own, you know, it's talking to him because, I mean, fuck, it's his head, you know. He's personally seeing it talking to him.
You're talking about, like, when Professor Oblivion, like, calls him by name?
Yeah. Yeah. And then the girl answers him in the same video. Mm-hmm. But, like, so...
Did you see that as a hallucination, or you thought that wasn't, like, a pre-recorded recording directly for him?
When I first saw it, I saw it as a hallucination, I think, but... Or no, when I first saw it, I saw it as, like, it was pre-recorded for him. Mm-hmm. But then as his hallucinations kept happening, I guess...
Yeah, because there's that weird... He's just talking, and then, like, the guy in a mask, like, walks in, ties his hand down, and he's just, like, just still giving him the information. It's like...
Yeah. Are they killing him for real?
Yeah, that's so... That type of shit's fun to me. That is, like, weird oddball filmmaking, right? Yeah. You're like, so they're gonna kill him, but he's just giving you information while... You know, that's how you know something hallucinatory is happening or whatever.
But the first video, is just so generic. I mean, as far as, like, it's just some sort of snuff.
Well, yeah, that's the first one that they quote unquote picked up.
Those are the real videos that are just opening his mind, right?
Yeah.
He needs to see the violence so it can open his mind, so he can be open. Yeah,
and then he starts having his own hallucinations.
Because then it becomes pretty...
Because they talk about who would ever watch all of this. Like,
They made it for him.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't exist for anybody else. Like, that
seems like...
I mean, Videodrome the signal, the plot, exists
for anybody.
So I guess that's my question.
They made the torture snuff stuff.
But, like, so how would you do that on a mass level?
It'd be Walking Dead. Walking Dead is an extremely violent show that the whole family watches. That's Videodrome.
You can put the video, sneak the Videodrome signal.
Well, they'll be open to it because there's the violent aspect to the show, which opens them up to the signal.
So they just want to do this on a more popular level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're testing it with Max, but then they would do something like The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Find out how Max's extreme programming can... and introduce the Videodrome signal. It does kind of suck they don't necessarily tell you to what extent. To change reality, get that. And it's a big thing. It's a whatever, but I guess I want to know, change reality.
Or you have the army of people that you can program and get them to do something, but then what do you want them to do?
Well, that's why I figure it's kind of like the They Live thing, right? Program them just to, whatever. If they want to buy something, if they want to sell something, if they want to,
as long as they're in control.
They're going to be just mass hallucinating
anyway.
Something.
But you're controlling the hallucinations.
Oh, that's true.
That's why they can see what is not there. The same way a conspiracy theorist sees what's, to them, they see something there that no one else is, everybody's blind to. So it'd be almost the same way, right? Everybody's having the same hallucination that they are having to the conspiracy theorist, right? Everybody's having that mass hallucination. Like, if you're a 9/11 truther, everybody else is hypnotized that know what the TV said. We've been programmed that A, B, C, D happened, and boom. We've been programmed to say that because that's what TV said.
That'll give me an idea for Videodrome 2.
Oh, shit.
Copyright Saturday Night Freak Show. So Videodrome 2, right, takes place now. And it's everybody, so you go into it and it's the Matrix, basically, right? I guess that's what it would be. It's like you live in the Matrix. Because everybody's been exposed to Videodrome for 30 odd years.
It'd be the 24-hour news cycle.
Somebody who finds
the violent,
Well, everybody, the reality would already be changed. So we are living in the alternate reality.
So then the story of getting out of it?
Yeah. It's the Matrix.
It's going backwards. It's the Matrix.
Okay.
You started out with the original idea and it's the
Matrix. Oh, shit, they already did it.
It's
already
Jesus.
Bad. Son of a bitch.
You could always do it again.
Yeah. No, there's...
yeah, just do it better.
There's a lot of... with the idea that, the merging of the biological and the technological... as far as just the visual approach that Cronenberg takes, which I think is part of what makes his earlier movies stand out from his later movies. I mean, he's still a cerebral filmmaker, I think, now, but now he makes these dramas that are... did anybody see Maps to the Start Line?
No.
What was the one with where he had Freud and... was it Freud and Jung met? I had Viggo Mortensen and Michael Fassbender. I watched half of it. I got to be honest, I had to turn it off.
There's no blood in this.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
What's the one with the two with Jeremy Irons?
Dead Ringers.
The twins, Dead Ringers.
Dead Ringers. Yeah. That one was special because, Jeremy Irons played two characters. When Jeremy Irons got nominated for an Oscar, won an Oscar, I think the year or 2 years subsequently, for Reversal of Fortune, I want to say it was. I can't remember what the movie was. But he, on his Oscar speech, said, and I want to give a shout-out to David Cronenberg. Wow. And it was just weird that, this guy's accepting an award, 2 years on for a different movie and thanked the director on a previous movie for what he had done. Because that's got to be, one of Jeremy Irons' best performances. When you're watching Dead Ringers, you forget it's two guys.
Yeah.
Or I forget that it's one guy. They seem like two completely different people, the way that he pulls it up. But in this movie, you'll see visions such as a lower abdominal glistening...
It's a belly vagina.
Yeah, what? Sweat for it.
It's a stomach pussy.
That forms in James Woods' lower abdomen.
No belly.
Doubles as a VCR.
Slot
loading.
He can be programmed.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's what that is.
What's that? Yeah.
Innovation.
Innovation. Hells yes.
And he can be programmed to do, you know, to take on these assassin jobs, basically, by being fed a
pulsating beta tape?
Beta tape.
So, I mean, it's his hallucination. So his hallucination is, it's giving, like, a visual representation to him getting another, like, signal.
That's what's
to go
funny
to
about Cronenberg, right? He's giving you a scary visual. Where it's like, that's probably not what's happening, right? People probably aren't taking pulsating beta tapes and shoving it in their stomach.
This is
like,
what
the fuck are they doing? Just handing him a new tape to watch? Yeah, probably, right?
Well,
it's like, hey, go home and watch this.
Right.
When he watches
it's
the
a
tape,
new,
it will
right.
program
it's a new
what,
signal.
From what to do, yeah.
But this is just his, James Woods at this point, his fucked up version of what is happening to him.
Because in those scenes, he's not around another television set, right? So, I mean, like, when he's in the iStore, there's no TV playing or whatever. And he starts hallucinating. So we, the viewer, aren't given the objective reality version of the scene. Right. We're given the subjective reality from the guy who's hallucinating. And so in that way, it's one of the trippiest movies I remember ever seeing at that point. I'm like, this is like a drug fugue movie.
Well, what you were saying
doing
about
it through, like, you know, it's like a science fiction concept.
Or what you were saying about Cronenberg showing, like, the infusion of mankind and technology. I mean, when James Wood takes his gun out and, I mean, it starts, like, fusing to his hand.
Yeah.
I mean, he, like, takes that to that literal sense, right? He's like, oh, once again, here's that idea that, you know, I'm using a piece of technology that is going to infuse my will. You know, this is another way that, you know,
dino lizard hand?
Yeah, or whatever the fuck. Yeah. Reminds me of Tetsuya the Iron Man or whatever. That's what I think when I saw that scene.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of those movies that I think owes a debt to this movie.
Yeah, you
know
right.
I mean, like, it's, and The Ring is another one that I think, like, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
It takes a significant lift from Videodrome, but I mean, it seems like it has been concepts from it are still, you know, resonating through, like, the science fiction and horror genres, even today from this movie.
I do kind of have a problem with some Cronenberg movies.
This one specifically?
Yep. Yeah. Just because I feel like, I always feel like Cronenberg's ideas are super awesome, right? They're really in-depth, they're intriguing, it's always about just humans as an organism, right? What affects us, what we do, blah, blah, blah. But I always feel like that's maybe not enough for characters to do stuff, right? Like, it always seems like they're in his movies, that's why I'm shocked that Videodrome's only like 89 minutes, you know. I remember watching it, I was like, shit, I remember it being long, yeah, I think 89 minutes.
Yeah, you guys were asking me, like, how long is it? I'm like, I know it's less than 2 hours.
I'm like, 89 it's 2 hours, man. I know it's 2 hours. But it's just because I think, you know, his characters, since all they're really doing is building up an idea, you know, you just have a character kind of going to this meeting, talking about what the fucking basis of the movie is. Going to this meeting, talking more about what the basis of the movie is, and then you can, like, throw some fucking guts around just to have a weird, trippy, like, scene.
Well, I was at the back of the room watching, and whenever the gore would show up, it's like I could see you guys, like, you know, react to it. Where, like, before that, it was like, they're talking, and you get some people, you know, scooting around in their chairs, there's a couple yawns, and then, like, some gore thing happens, everybody wakes up, and then they seem like they're spaced out.
Well, it's always bizarre.
So it's like, what the hell? What's going to happen next? And then you wait and you kind of get lulled in. And then something weird happens. And, you know, so he's got like a decent.
Like, remember The Brood?
Put them
where she's like biting, like in The Brood, where the woman is like projecting her hate on people and creating babies out of her side.
Yeah, she creates. Yeah, she gives birth to her anger.
She
literally.
Well, there's she like fucking like tears at the skin of her. I mean, Cronenberg just shows you the most like bizarre. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's always people like putting their mouth up to shit and really touching shit. Yeah. You know that like.
Just poking at it.
Well, I remember when I was watching The Fly, Cronenberg talks about how like he didn't think about it when he was making the movie, but when he had Gina Davis hug thank you, I was going to say Bridges. You know,
wow,
she
what
hugs
movie
him,
that would have been.
She hugs him on the side that his ear falls off of. So the whole audience knows that she's hugging, like she chose to hug the side that his fucking ear just fell off, you know?
Yeah.
And, it's, he always just makes sure to, like...
Right.
Ugh.
Well, he also.
Oh, so you have a nerve there. I'm going to poke at it.
Yeah. You just. Yeah. It's the goofy. I mean,
like, yeah. That noise.
Yeah.
Whenever they refer to Cronenberg, there's always in quotes somewhere next to his name when you read an article about him. Body horror.
Body horror. Body definitely. Horror.
It's the idea that he keeps on, you know, just, I guess, poking at those exposed nerves, right, that we all have in our psyche. It's like, Jesus Christ, I didn't actually want to see, you know, that or some kind of twisted abnormalities of the human flesh. He always likes to say,
flesh.
The flesh.
There's no skin.
Right.
There's no, it's just flesh. The flesh. That sounds scarier.
And his other thing is, I guess, you know, as a filmmaker, at least, you know, again, in the period, you know, this early period, what he was doing, horror and science fiction stuff, he's like trying to externalize, what would you say, like abstract concepts, right? Like someone who gives birth to anger. You see it literally.
Birth to anger.
There's a guy in Scanners.
Cancer forming into a, you know.
Yeah, there's a guy in Scanners who literally lives inside his head. He sculpts a gigantic version of his head and makes a house in it. Right? You know?
Scanners? I mean,
yeah. There's the artist that. Guy in Scanners. That. He built this big giant Crazy. Version of his own head. So it's just like, I mean, this is, you know, it's a guy who I think, like, this is one of those cases of an artist working in, you know, like a, you know, I guess one of the lower genres. Now he's graduated to one of the higher genres, you know, it's like, but I think, like, because of who he was, that elevates the stuff that, you know, the horror stuff, you know. The Scanners, I guess, was the big one. Videodrome, The Fly is, you know, like a fucking classic. The Brood, Rabid. I miss one in there somewhere? I went, like, kind of out of order. But that's, like, the that's the canon, right, of Cronenberg.
Hey, one thing I want to talk about before we get too far off of talking about the movie specifically. One thing I like that they mentioned in this, there's a woman who brings programming to James Woods in this, and he kind of tasks her with, oh, see if you can find out who runs Videodrome, you know? And I like when she later talks to him where she's like, you know, I think it's snuff. I don't think it's fake. I don't think it's, you know, she kind of warns him to be careful, and when he kind of blows it off, I like that she mentions how the reason he needs to worry is because these people have a philosophy that you don't have. And I really like that concept. Like, shit, I was just telling somebody the other day about, I don't even know what, some political conspiracy type, I don't know, something, and they're like, you know what, I try just not to care or whatever. I'm like, well, you see, that's, you know, it's like, that's, you know, how they will, because these people have a philosophy they're living by. They're using violence and using shit as a way to, a means through getting something done, where you, yeah, I just want to see it as entertainment. It's like, that's fine. You can see it as entertainment exploitation, but you got to understand that if people have a true meaning and you don't recognize that meaning, you're easily going to be like trampled by, you know, someone that actually has a goal in mind, you know? I thought that was a really cool portion of this movie. We later find that, or we think, we're led to believe that Max kills her.
Yeah, you never see her after that, right?
Yeah, and I mean, he dreams about killing her. He
no, but after the
wakes
scene
up
where
with her in the
yeah,
bed.
After the scene where he wakes up next to her in the bed,
but that could have
like,
been his first
shit, he
kill.
Killed her while he was on, you know, tripping balls on this Videodrome thing.
Balls on Videodrome.
It's a Ramon song, right?
Yeah, there
it's
you
a
go.
Balls on video.
It's a Ramon
But then, you know, that's proven to be like a vision that he had. She did, it wasn't actually dead.
I guess it turned more into a door. Strip them balls on video drum.
Yeah.
Copyright 2015 Saturday Night Preacher. There's another character that I really enjoy in this movie is the Professor Brian Oblivion.
Brian Oblivion.
So this is a guy we first meet at a TV talk show, and he's like one of these commentators who talks to you. You know, he shows up as a television set on the TV because, you know, he says the only way that he'll appear on television is if he's on television. On television or something
well, because
like that.
He talks about how if you're on television, that will become the real you. You cease to become, you cease to be you, and like that moment in time becomes a more realized version, or at least people can walk away from it thinking that's the realized version of you.
But he
you're
has,
trapped in like, that.
But his philosophy, I mean, I guess we find out that he, you know, was one of the three guys that created Videodrome and then tried to get out of it and they killed him. Spoiler alert.
Well, because he found out what they were going to use it for.
Right.
He was going to use it for love or something.
But he is like...
is that good?
He's extremely, like, prophetic also. Well, I think this is Cronenberg obviously using the character, but like he has his name. He's like, my name isn't Oblivion. This is my TV name.
Dude.
One day we're all going to have special names that we use on television. I'm like, oh my God, we're doing that right there. Now. You got your
I think Facebook is the real video draw for sure.
Yeah. So you're going to, and the idea that like it's better to live virtually than in real life. It's like all of these kinds. This is 1983. Right, that he's talking about that. I also like there was something else that he said before we find out that the guy has been, you know, dead for like 11 months and like all of his. I know what it was. He said he hasn't had a conversation in 20 years. His preferred mode of discourse is the monologue.
Is the monologue.
You know, so he just likes it. He just. Oh, no.
Shit,
structural integrity.
Playing with a house of cards there.
Yeah.
Hang on, folks.
There we go.
Technical difficulties.
Nope. Human error.
Yeah. But his, so just the idea that, like, he's just going to talk at you on TV. You can't actually ask him questions. If you want to, he'll send you a videotape in your preferred format. Mm-hmm. Could be VHS, Jenny.
But we do find out that it's because he's been dead and his woman, like, which another... Once again, another kind of futuristic thing, right? Compiling somebody just from all the media they've been recorded from. I mean, shit, nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Tupac. How long has Tupac been dead for? And he is still doing. He's still doing concerts. I know.
Is he? I don't think he is dead.
It was a
replacement
shock.
Who died.
It's a shock. But that's the same idea, right?
Yeah, Michael Jackson is now in Las Vegas. Michael Jackson and Tupac.
How many movies has...
Young Schwarzenegger been in?
Two. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Well, that's one for sure. Yeah, definitely.
James Gandolfini.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of. He's been in a shit ton.
That's another thing the Congress was talking about.
What's his name?
Is videotape. Which I heard that is like a real plan in Hollywood.
Well, they've done, I guess...
Mass producing every video image, every like facial expression you can make, every whatever. That way they can make a digital library of it. Because as an actor... You were only, like, Tom Cruise is only Tom Cruise from this moment of time, right? You're only a viable asset. I mean, maybe not Tom Cruise. You know, someone like...
No,
let's take Tom someone... Cruise. But who's somebody that's really, like, the American Pie girl, right? She had her fucking 15 minutes, you know? So they could, like, freeze her in this moment of time and reuse her over and over again. That way, you know, she'll never age for
generations. There was like some concern in Hollywood. I want to say maybe 10 years ago. It seemed like you had Laurence Olivier showing up in Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow. You had Humphrey Bogart showing up on a Tales from the Crypt episode.
Yeah.
You had Fred Astaire was in like a Hoover commercial or something like that. And so the idea that like you know these people are dead.
Oh, Steve McQueen shows up in a Mustang commercial.
Yeah, so they're hawking shit that like they may or may not have.
Oh, Elvis is everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well,
he is a lot.
You cease to be a person.
Yeah, you're a commodity in some way, a product that's you know
what's,
being used to. Yeah, I don't know. It's I suppose it's an extension of the Brian Oblivion thing that was you know proposed in this.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's the video will. It's like the idea
along
that
with the new flush.
You can talk to and you know have any sort of outcome. It's the t-shirt and the hat of whoever wins the Super Bowl. You know, it's the idea that you plan for any sort of outcome or any sort of situation that's going to happen. It's just in video form, so that you're ready. You know, that's why he can talk to Max or he can you know like. That's a very specific situation, but I mean, I think the global usage of this would be, you know, to like you would have your assassins, you would have your shows built to assassins, you'd have your shows built for people that you know need to
You're saying like tailored content.
This felt like it was specific to Max.
Well, this is like this is even before.
We're saying before
the advent of like branchable CD-ROMs or something like that, right? Where like if this person existed in a virtual space and you asked them a question, that you could change the answer that they gave based on, you know, some operator or some AI or whatever that would say, like, you know, here's what the question was. Here's a list of pre-recorded responses. Play this one back.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, because that's kind of what they were anticipating in 1983, right, with this character. They do that a bunch of times in this movie where they're using video technology in ways that we have now, you know, we have. The video alarm clock.
Right.
The video message in your car as you're driving somewhere. You know,
it's almost more interesting the fact that it's pre-recorded. I mean, by today's standards, it would be some sort of AI that they were using to change, you know, at any given moment based on your... I mean, we use it now, like, based on your interests to sell products to people on the internet, but... And or Siri, yeah. But it's interesting to think about, like, the amount of time it took, like, this one guy, you know, to record all these things and then to have all these responses after his death, 11 months after his death, still being able to, you know, speak to the public. He's like, I was on a talk show with him. He's like, yeah, well, you weren't there. He wasn't there. He was, you know, it was pre-recorded based on what he was going to say. But, yeah, I agree. I think that we're definitely moving in that direction.
Well, it's the same thing. We've just shrunk it down.
Yeah.
To today.
It's more like real time.
Well, dude, I shit you not.
It's real time, but it's only because you can access like an infinite amount of choices.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But it's also let me real quick, it had a parallel to me with the movie Transcendence, right? Where Brian Oblivion says, or his daughter says, that he was okay letting his body die because he still lived on, like, in his preferred platform of television.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, medium, thank you very much.
Yes.
But I'm sitting there going, like, well, that still to me makes no sense because there's no, you know, there's no consciousness going forward. There's the idea that, you know, it's like, well, I've pre-recorded so much shit that you can keep watching this forever and still keep getting me on television, right? So the concept of me is still going on after my death.
If you don't believe in a soul, that is all a human is the collective of their knowledge and ideas, right? If they're not, you don't need more than, this is how people actually think, people call transhumanists, this is how they actually think they're going to be able to download themselves into computers, like in the next 60 years, because they think, it's great. Brilliant plan. You guys in line first. You guys go ahead. But the idea that all you are, since you're just a bunch of patterns, your personality is just a bunch of learned patterns throughout your collective time or whatever. But the only reason that sucks, though, is because you're going to have to choose a time where you'd have to assume that this is your best self right now and become a robot now where you could always learn something more.
Yeah, and then the robot will learn beyond where you are right now. It could be a completely different...
Yeah, it can't even be. That's why it's not you, people. Don't want to be a fucking cyborg or
you die.
Robot. You die.
Okay, but going back to the idea that, like, living in this vision... Wait, did you have something?
No, I'm good.
Well, the idea that, like, you're living in this virtual existence, is that the new flesh that the movie talks about?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
But why is he for it, right? Because he's like, death to Videodrome, long live the new flesh.
Well, he's been programmed to think that way.
But it's still counterintuitive. I mean, he only starts saying this after he sees the Oblivion's daughter again, and she talks about how, they want to use it for, you know, basically mass mind control and, assassinations, blah, 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 political, whatever.
I like the way that they make eyeglasses and, like, guidance systems for missiles.
Right? That's the point.
It's like, we make sunglasses or eyeglasses.
Well, but I like that idea because,
because
television stations, those are owned by all our entertainment does come from people that spend money in actual, like, fucking different areas of society.
I mean, when you really think about it, aren't glasses guidance systems for missiles? I mean, really?
Not for me.
Think about that.
2020.
Let that sink in.
Yeah, it's the...
And they operate out of an eyeglass store.
It's like, building a device that allows you to see or pinpoint or the precision.
Yeah, I get the guidance or something, you know, whatever. It's some kind of sight guidance or whatever.
Also the idea that it's kind of ironic that I think maybe it was you, Jenny, that talked about how, like, in this film, like, James Woods looked so young. And it's like the film Videodrome is, in a way, preserving these actors that are in it, you know, forever and ever. It's like having a child. It's a different way of preserving your legacy, because, I mean, like, that's kind of, I think, the appeal to actors. A part of the appeal of why they go into acting is the idea that you can be in something that will, you know, if it's popular, will live on forever, ever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the only immortality.
But even in that, it's immortality, I suppose, but it's like as a ghost. You're doomed to repeat the same thing every time the film is played.
But a lot of people think that's the only reality, right? Like, if me and you die, no one's going to remember us in 100 years. But Batman, everybody will know Batman for hundreds and hundreds of years, so who's more real?
Well, Batman, you're gonna Batman's different, though. I mean, that's a character that I think will change and transcend through time versus, like, a character in a movie. I mean, like Batman's an icon.
Well, but they can always remake movies, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they can't remake Tom, well, I guess... They can't remake Tom Cruise. I was going to say
that. Not now.
Well, they can have somebody play him.
I'm sure they could.
I think Tom Cruise has been.
Like,
if anybody's the first one, it's going to be him.
Raven Simone.
think about Randy Quaid in, like, one of the Vacation movies versus Randy Quaid now. You know, like,
right?
How do you want to remember that guy?
If they would have. If they would have made that digital copy after Christmas Vacation,
right?
Yeah. Like, you know,
Platoon with Charlie Sheen.
Or HIV, Charlie Sheen.
Sadly, now, I mean, we're going to remember the HIV one because with the way the media is, it's everywhere. But, you know, at a time, there was still that. I mean, you can still go back to that Platoon Charlie Sheen.
Look at Bill Cosby. If you only held him up as Cosby Show Cosby, then you would never know the true, like, you know.
Yeah.
The true bullshit.
Well, yeah.
You either die a hero.
Batman again.
It's really true.
It all comes back to
the Dark Knight. It really does.
Yeah, but I think we are in this because I had a Videodrome moment earlier. It was last year.
Let me see your. It was last year, Travis.
Dude, I shit you not. When the Ferguson riots.
Do you also have a labia in your stomach?
I wish I had a labia near my stomach, anywhere around my stomach.
Labia in general. If I just had one.
So the Ferguson riots were happening.
We can't. Can we make that jump?
Right. Yeah, we have to. Right when the Ferguson riots were happening, I like to watch Arrow on the CW. And they had an episode that completely had it was a political, like, I mean, it was talking about Ferguson. It wasn't covered under anything. It was just like, what the fuck, you know? And Ferguson only happened, you know, like a week's prior. So that had to have been a split decision that, like, we want to make a statement about this. We want to put, you know, that's fucking Videodrome. That's trying to create a consensus between everybody on how we should feel about a actual real political situation through watching a fucking superhero show,
right,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Which usually I love those kind of when a superhero show has the chance to talk about something real, but like I said, at the same time, what the fuck, man?
I mean, I see what they're doing, and, like, somehow I'm able to give filmmakers a pass when they do that, because somehow when a filmmaker does it, I get the idea that it's, like, one guy, basically the auteur behind. It's like, that's his, you know, if you agree or don't agree with George Romero's politics, at least it's like, okay, it's George Romero's politics. What you're talking about is, like, this is some kind of, there's a bunch of guys in a writer's room.
Like, they know these are the political points we want to make about this current actual situation, you know?
Yeah. It's the mass brain trust working, not just, like, you know, one dude. Well, there's also like a moment in this where, you know, it's like sometimes I'm like, okay, well, there's a moment in, you know, this show that seems eerily reminiscent of the time. There's a moment in Videodrome when the turncoat, Harlan, the engineer, who it turns out has been exposing his boss, Max Wren, this for 2 years to, you know, he's been working with him, and then he's exposing him to Videodrome to give him the brain tumor.
Because he's wondering why he's not getting hallucinations. Like, you've been watching
it. Yeah, but if you watch it, he's, like, staring at a screwdriver when the video drove
transition.
He's never paying attention to
it. Yeah, he's never actually watching.
Yeah, it's playing in the background.
But he has a speech in which he, to me, like, this time watching it, I'm, like, eerily reminiscent of Jeffrey Combs' performance in Reanimator.
Yeah,
when I'm watching it, you watch it, it's like, Jesus Christ, that is the Jeffrey Combs, that's Herbert West right there. But he gives a speech about how, like, you know, North America is corrupt and we're gonna, or it's soft,
we're soft,
and we're fighting, you know, like, new enemies that are, you know, they're gonna be tough, and we have to, and it's like,
oh yeah, that's the plot, duh. That's why they want video drone. I forgot that.
It's probably true, actually. Totally forgot that myself.
They're trying to make fucking tough people out of Americans. We're too soft.
Yeah.
The Vietnam War, all the hippies made us soft, so they
and
have
they're
to
program
create
them, right?
Violence.
Where did this take place? This film? What country?
Toronto, Canada.
Canada.
This was in Canada?
Uh-huh.
It was shot in Canada or it took place in Canada?
Both.
And Pittsburgh? Did they go to Pittsburgh?
She goes to, but Civic TV is supposed to be in Toronto.
Toronto, Canada.
Yeah.
It seemed like a Canadian.
What are you talking about? It was very gray. I've never been to Canada. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Just hockey players
Yeah, take it
that way.
I didn't see a single Tim Hortons.
Right?
No one was, like, no one was saying sorry and
all sorry.
Boo.
Yeah.
Care.
Truly.
Getting the care?
Getting the care. Yeah. You have to get the Gairds.
Yeah.
Gairds and care.
It's like snowing.
Well, all right, so the last maybe topic that we've got to
we
cover.
Officially put down the Canadians.
Video. We're very sorry. We're apologizing. Videodrome's relation to virtual reality.
Yeah.
Experiencing
it's coming,
today.
Folks. Videodrome is coming for you. Because, well, shit. This makes me want to watch the Congress again. The Congress is like the next evolution of Videodrome. The Congress is if Videodrome actually happens. Yeah, that is the movie The Congress with, who's in that?
Robin Wright.
That's right.
That's where she gives up her licenses.
Yeah.
Her full appearance.
After she does that, the movie just goes,
it goes
fucking bizarre.
It goes cartoon world.
Yeah.
Like, everybody is in that hallucination.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that movie is the Videodrome reality of everybody walking around in the hallucination.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to ruin the end. You gotta watch it, or we might watch it here on the Saturday Night Free Show.
The Congress.
The Congress.
Give you something to chew on.
Pretty serious.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I've seen other movies that were, you know, I mean, when you talk, I guess it occurs to me that it's related to virtual reality because in this movie, it's using hallucination, right? Instead of
as the virtual reality,
the Matrix, which you plug in and it basically gives you a living dream, mm-hmm. or Strange Days or something like that, where you jack.
Yeah, they didn't have the internet, so he didn't realize
right.
the concept
they didn't see that.
Of like
yeah.
everybody being connected through mm-hmm. wires and wireless. Blah, blah, blah.
But it's kind of also, you know, again, whether it's just a concept that they think up at the time, and you know, we're assigning all this meaning to it, you know, later. I mean, being 1983, it's just now that it's a point where we can look back on it and go like, Jesus Christ, you know, it's like some of the ideas that he was talking about in that movie are kind of,
I think all technology is always like, we're always 40 years behind. Like, government and people have about 40 years in the future, like now, you know what I'm saying? Like, what we get,
the shit we're thinking about
they
now.
Had 40 years prior, you know, because they've always got to test it. They've always got to da-da-da-da-da before they mass market anything. So that's why I think people like Cronenberg, once, you know, you start making movies, you start meeting people high up, you start to hear concepts of shit that, you know, that
yeah.
is happening. So that's
and
why
you,
I can see why filmmakers,
it, yeah.
yeah, filmmakers can be some of the first people to make social comments on what's going to happen because they probably rub elbows with people that fucking know where it's headed, especially in the entertainment business, right? You know
yeah.
where the future is going. In the entertainment business,
But sometimes I wonder if that's, I mean, like, that's maybe possible, but in some ways it diminishes, like, the, no, no, I'm just, an alternate interpretation. It just that it diminishes the creative capacity of the artistic individual. It's the fact that someone could actually sit there and just by...
Yeah, quit thinking everybody's a genius. They make movies. They didn't create nothing. If, no, he would, they, if he would just create, come up with it, he would fucking create the internet.
I think they do create these internal worlds that they can walk around in and live in. It is their virtual reality. And then they, you know, go like, wow, this is, you know, something. Sometimes you get something as remarkably different from like anything else, you know, as Videodrome, and they put it on the screen. And then right. you're like, well, what the fuck? How did you come up with that? And, you know, I mean, you ask the guy, and they're usually always like, I had a dream, right. or I sat in a room and this came to me, or David Lynch sitting there like, I had an idea, then like another idea. Right. Ideas draw other ideas to them. And I'm like, this is not helping me with my creative process, listening to you. Like,
because he can't you tell you, idea? We met at the Illuminati Christmas party, they told me what was going to come.
Right. And they come up with the visual of everything. Like they, like you can come up with the visual of a time machine and all that stuff, but you can't like see how that shit, you know, works. I forgot where I was going with this. We're talking about it like
it's the same as the letter in Jerry Maguire. The guy didn't actually have to write the fucking letter. The screenwriter didn't have to write what was in that letter. It changed everybody's opinion. Or whatever, it, like, inspired all these people, right? Because if you heard it, you'd be inspired.
It's like Harvey the Rabbit.
Well, you didn't actually have to write that. It's just the character wrote it, and everybody else read it. But the audience, you don't actually get to see it. So it's not, like, the work of genius, because it didn't. You didn't get to hear what the letter was. The guy never actually invented the letter. If you know, if you've seen Jerry Maguire, you know what I'm talking about. Sorry, I'm getting drunk. Probably getting late. So we should probably
talk about Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, when he gets drunk, he always talks about Jerry Maguire. Jesus, Colin.
Give him a shot.
We should go to mailbag. Igor, are you around somewhere?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
All right, so first of all, we've got Chad Pope wrote into us. Oh, by the way, you can get a hold of us on Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. If you comment there, there's a damn good chance that we will say something about or read it on the air. You can talk
might
about
just win our respect.
And you could talk about any of our movies. You know, we have like 150-odd episodes or something like that on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and other fine, fantastic podcast repositories on the internet.
One day somebody will hear one.
See, that's the thing. I would rather live on the internet than...
That's what we're doing, Colin.
Yeah,
this we're immortal.
This is what we're doing.
This is what we're
no, we're not immortal. People have to listen to it.
Yeah.
Long after we're dead, somebody's going to find these podcasts and sample our voice and bring us back. Okay. Chad Pope says about Videodrome, he says it's hard to pick a favorite Cronenberg movie, but he'd have to say that Shivers, They Came From Within, that's the one I forget.
Fucking Shivers is crazy.
But you can't go wrong with any of his 70s to 80s.
Wait a second, did you break your iPhone? You got a piece of paper.
Well, this is more reliable. I can get across Facebook, Twitter.
This is
at,
the first.
At Sat Freak Show. And, yeah, and our email, yes. Saturday Night Freak Show at yahoo.com.
I'm sorry.
Jara Matthews writes in about Would You Rather, our Would You Rather episode. She says the, I'm assuming this is she. I'm sorry, Jara, if you aren't. The ending is super predictable right from the beginning.
Well, Sean got it pretty quickly, but.
All right.
What's the...
I can't remember how it ends.
Is it a twist?
The brother dies.
It is a twist ending.
She goes through all that shit and the brother's dead when she gets home.
Oh. Spoiler warning. Jesus Christ.
That's right.
We talked about it.
I know.
It was like three episodes
The people who are
ago.
Listening to the Videodrome episode didn't... Okay, sorry about that.
Damn it, I watched Videodrome. Would you rather?
And Greg Lucid writes in about Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah, what the fuck? That's an old one.
He says, I like everything about this movie. I really hope there's either an updated DVD of it or released in 2016 because it's the 30th anniversary. Yeah.
Oh, shit, really?
Is it? Yeah, I suppose 86.
Yeah.
Holy
yeah.
fuck.
Did you like it when we yelled at Brent? Because that was the best part of that podcast.
Greg, you got to tell us if you're listening, you got to tell us if you liked it when we yelled at Brent on the Flight of the Navigator podcast.
Always.
Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. for the time of your life. And now it's time for wrap-ups. Our final thoughts about the movie. I'm guessing that Tom is going to go for a while because he's been absolutely silent the entire
building. He's a bubbling volcano.
The show's already been over an hour. Yeah. So
since he said his name. That is the only thing he has said.
That means that Tom hated the movie. But Brent is up first. So Brent, please.
Wrap this what mother did you think? Up.
He's shaking with joy. Shot. He's shaking
Get
with joy.
Get him a shot. I'm sitting here looking at Tom. I know it's coming. So it's good that it's better that, I mean, I guess I'm not going to be real positive with it. I have a big problem with Cronenberg in the sense that I feel like he's a student filmmaker. Like Travis, you were kind of saying that he keeps driving the same idea home.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's got an idea that he never gets across the whole film. Like, I've felt that way about a number of films. And I mean, sure, talking about it here tonight with you guys, this is the first time I've seen it. But maybe after a couple of viewings, I might get it. But, like, I feel like it's not presented in a way that it... Did you just do Malort?
No. Do you think you'll have a couple of viewings of this movie? Or just keep going on. You said after a couple of viewings, maybe I'll get it. But do you think you'll have a couple of viewings of this movie?
Yeah, I don't think I will. I don't think
he almost got time to make a noise.
I don't think I'll go back to it.
Tom is just squirting liquor straight into his mouth right now.
But I would definitely, I would say that if you're a fan of Cronenberg, it's definitely a Cronenberg type film. I mean, it's from his early stuff. But I think we really need to get to Tom. So I will say, you know what? I might pass on this one. I might pass.
We have one mic.
Sorry, listeners. I wish you could just see Tommy looks like just like a drunk that's like 1 a.m. in the morning, just like taking that last shot before the sun comes up. This movie, yeah, I wasn't a fan. I don't really have anything to say about it. I'm sorry, Colin, I don't. James Woods is in it. Debbie Harry's in it. I've never seen her in a movie before, so I can say that I have now.
She was a cartoon mouse in Rock and Rule.
Oh,
forgot to mention that.
Rock and Rule?
Rock and Rule.
Yeah.
She's a brunette in this movie, which surprised me, because, you know, she is Blondie. Travis and I think my favorite part was just debating with Travis whether or not James Wood had a actual vagina that played Beta Max's in his stomach. I thought it was just slit. Travis begs to differ.
Where were the labia?
I don't labias think
only
there
exist
was.
On vaginas. You see, folks, there's an outer labia and then an inner labia.
Well, you see, and Travis, his fucking I happen stomach to be had a female. Both.
Well, look in the mirror. I'm
sorry. Jesus Christ. All right, but I don't recommend this movie. I didn't really care for it.
Best wrap up ever. Oh God!
Oh, there he goes.
All right. Okay. I didn't say anything the whole podcast. mostly because I honestly like had nothing to say about this movie. I was awake the entire time. I watched the movie. I was not bored. I wouldn't walk away and say I hated it, but I wasn't moved either way. So I was confused as all hell. That movie confused the hell out of me. I never knew whether he was in a hallucination or whether it was real. And there was a point where I just finally just said, forget it. I gave up. And I couldn't follow what was anything that was going on. Because they'd be like, here's this twist. Here's this turn. Oh, wait. No. You know what? I finally gave up.
Remember, it's an anti-smoking ad. Yeah, he started tripping after he stopped smoking.
Yep, he started tripping. So I just...
Which is an anti-S&M, right? Because that's why he stopped smoking.
Oh, well.
After you burn your girlfriend's boob with a cigarette.
Yeah, and you smell the flesh on the end.
I was really... You know, I was interested, like, the beginning opening shot with the picture of the boob, and then we got, like, some... We got some Asian boobs. I'm like, yeah, and then you get to see Blondie's boobs. But then after that, there was no more boobs, and it started to get confusing. And
they bought his stomach vagina.
It was a giant vagina. Most of this movie.
He put a gun into it. Gross.
He pulled a gun out of it.
Yeah. Well, the gun went in.
Well, sure, but pulling the gun out.
It went in and came back out.
Much like Brent, honestly, I don't like David Cronenberg. Like, I don't like his film.
Wait, how many David Cronenberg movies have you seen?
On the carpet right now, Tom. You know what?
Name five.
Prove it.
I got a history of violence.
Cronenberg film? History of violence.
I would say I like his style. I just don't like the execution. Because I like all the stuff in his movies. I just don't like the execution.
I thought going into this movie, and I would dig it, because I'm like, man, it's about television. It's about, like, television controlling people. And because I work in television, I'm like, I would totally dig all that stuff. And I'm like, it just twisted and turned and just went, like, confusing. And I walked away, and, like, I didn't care. It was like, it's an average movie. That I just, my mind just, like, checked out. Like, I checked out second boob, and I haven't came back.
Yeah, but you didn't fall asleep.
I didn't fall asleep.
You didn't completely check out. I've seen it when you did.
Yeah, you have. So, I mean.
So there was still something.
Yeah.
Right?
You hope for more boob, I guess. I don't know, maybe. God, I didn't like this movie at all. And I honestly, much like Jenny had, I got nothing to say about it. And that's why I haven't said anything on podcast, because I have nothing to input. There's no input. I'm sorry. But
nuns on roller skates with the, what was it? What's the fuck?
Switchblade.
Switchblade.
Rollerblade. Rollerblade.
Yeah, would have been more appropriate for it too.
What the hell were you thinking?
Okay, so I'm gonna go now.
like lead or
yeah. Wow. I remember the first time I saw this, I also didn't think much of it, just because I do think the look of the movie is a little bland. It's the early '80s.
Like
I think that what you're okay, crazy. Sure, so no, fucking crazy. like RoboCop. Christ, this guy's going to bring up every movie that you like that he didn't like.
No, no. As far as the look, because I seriously was thinking that. Like, no. There's a lot
of clutter in this. Everything's offices, so there's just, like, fucking random pieces of paper all over walls that just say random crap. You know, a little of a messy, realistic look. But, I do like the weirdness of this movie. I like it. I mean, it's got the same effect as, like, a Freddy Krueger movie or something. Like, you don't know when you're stepping into the dream state, or, you know, you're normal and everything's normal, then all of a sudden, you know, fucking who knows what can happen. You know, you don't know just what the what. Yeah, you just don't know. Yeah, that shit. So, what? He's making a phallic, what the VCR to him is seen as a phallic like a female
he's receiving
phallic, it's, I can get it. fucking movie ain't so hard, guys. What are you talking about?
No, it's not hard.
but this is what? My second time seeing it, and I'm telling you, man, the second time is a lot. And I probably saw this for the first time maybe 5 years ago or so. So it's been a long time since I've only seen it once, and watching it the second time. Just this whole movie's a lot clearer. Like, I know what the fuck this movie's about. You know, it's like, I mean, do I agree necessarily with some, You know, Cronenberg has very weird ideas. He always has, like, scientists doing these, like, mass fucking society experiments, right? Just like the, you got the guy in the brood that teaches people to fucking, make their feelings into physical
the guys
form.
In scanners who make the pill or whatever.
Yeah, and this you got the priest that is. I mean, it's just such a weird scene when you go into a church and I mean it's called Cathode Ray Ministries, right? That reminded me of They Live. You know, the fact that everybody would go in that church and watch dude on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, spreading the word on you know the They Live glasses and stuff. And so, I don't know, they're very odd. Like, you know when you're in a Cronenberg movie, just because, I mean, he does create a sense of, to me, where you're at in that society, right? He'll always, you know, if the fucking movie is about people watching TV, I mean, everybody's watching TV, like, throughout this, you know, the whole movie, you know? He, like, sticks with the themes. But I do believe his themes... It's almost like they're enough to talk about. I don't think you need to necessarily make movies about them, necessarily, because I find the characters don't have a lot of stuff to do. They're really wandering around waiting for things to happen to them and waiting for revelations to come to them, right? They're not necessarily... Most horror movies or whatever would be like detective work shit, right? Oh, I gotta find this person, And this kind of is, you know, it has the whole, well, I need to talk to this guy now. I need to... Who knows this? Who, you know... Tracking who does Videodrome and who is against Videodrome. I mean, I have to recommend it because it's one of the fucking weirdest movies you'll ever see. You know, for that alone, it's just like, it's fucking weird. And I mean, it's not, to me, it's a good weird. It's not like, to me, Eraserhead is bad weird. Eraserhead's like, well, because come on, that's something where it's just like, the fuck is this about? You know?
It's about the fear of, it's black of fatherhood.
It's black and white. That's how arty that is.
Yeah, watch that movie with that in your mind. That's a father's, like, the horror of a guy's, left alone in a room with a crying baby. Baby gets sick. What do you do? It's a fucking nightmare.
So, yeah. No kids. Like I said, I recommend it.
I think I'm with the majority on this one. I didn't really care for the movie. And I, you know, with everybody else, I can't really explain why. Like, I appreciate some of the themes that were explored within it. I like the visual representation of that he puts forward of what's going on, you know, the ingesting of everything in the stomach and all that, and him becoming one with, you know, one with the gun and all that stuff.
One
but,
with the gun.
That's an easy song.
Yeah. I didn't care for it. I can't really explain why. It's just not. It didn't hit me anywhere whatsoever. Just missed the target for me. So I'll have to pass on it. Nothing. Didn't make me feel like anything one way or another, really. Right in the middle. Nope.
Wait, how many Cronenberg movies have you seen?
Not many. Well, I've seen this, The Fly, I've seen The History of Violence, maybe one other one. That's about it.
Okay, except for maybe The Fly. Do any of those make you feel anything? I wonder if that's Cronenberg's intention. You know, I mean,
Shivers makes me feel bad for having a sexual desire.
Right, but I mean, it's a thing that strikes you as a cerebral concept more than an emotional thing. The Fly at least has the love story, or, you know, the doomed love story, the tragic, you know, end of the love story. Oh, God, I spoiled The Fly, too.
Oh, dear Lord, you both set off.
I know, at the very beginning, I think
we will spoil five additional movies, not just
spoiler warning, in the watching of this movie.
Yeah. Oh, God, people are going to hate us. But, you know...
Can you believe that dad got his memory back in Clockwork Orange? I can't believe that.
What the hell?
It didn't work.
It crying game. It's a man.
It's a man.
Sixth Sense, Bruce Willis is dead. Okay,
the whole time. The Titanic sinks.
He is Kaiser Soze.
Oh, that was the worst. Oh my god.
Okay, that's funny. So,
god damn it.
The spoiler episode.
So,
go through the list.
Yeah. So now I forgot what I said. Oh, okay. So the
Darth Vader's Luke's father.
Hey, oh shit. Hey,
Brad Pitt and Edward Norton in Fight Club are the same.
Same person.
You just blew my mind.
Oh, man. Oh my god.
They're on Earth in Planet of the Apes. Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, damn, the whole time.
You blew it up.
Cronenberg's contemporaries at the time in the
Rosebud was a sled.
Was the fucking sled?
The sled.
The contemporaries were John Carpenter, Toby Hooper, Wes Craven. Who am I missing? Those are the guys who were like, formed my. Like, those are the Mount Rushmore of horror movie filmmakers, right? And then there's David Cronenberg was in there. And Cronenberg's stuff was always very different. Well, and George Romero, right? Probably.
No.
And I'm going to, think of somebody else probably as we go ahead. Okay.
Dario Argento.
I only found out about him later, though. What's... I didn't know...
That doesn't mean he doesn't get to be Mount Rushmore of horror people.
But when I had the Mount Rushmore... my personal Mount Rushmore as a kid was these guys, And then there was Cronenberg. And, Cronenberg's stuff, when I saw it when I was younger, I think maybe I saw Scanners first, the guy's fucking head explodes, 10 minutes into the movie. And it's like, when you see it, you remember it. I mean, stuff's like that's been done since then. But it's like, his stuff, that made an impression. I saw... They Came From Within, a.k.a. Shivers, on, The Late Show one night, and there's scenes
in
that
movie.
Was on TV? Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
There was a scene in that movie that was not edited.
Really?
It was on, a local
Ladies
channel.
And gentlemen, all it is rape and eating. If zombies raped you before they ate you, that's Shivers.
There's a woman in a bathtub, and, one of these slugs crawls up through the drain, and she's unaware of it, but it's...
No.
Guess where it goes.
Yeah.
No.
And it's a sexually transmitted parasite.
And her vagina.
It makes everyone who gets the parasite within them is super horny.
Horny and hungry.
Fucking everybody else in this apartment. It all happens in this
Right? Family. Am I crazy? They fuck and eat them, right?
No, they just fuck.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because they kiss them and then you see the thing.
I thought they were like fucking cannibals.
No,
literally. But they fuck them to death, don't they?
No, or they transmit the parasite.
They just transmit
the
parasite.
So what's the horror?
What?
Sexually transmitted disease.
Well, it's a parasite, a slug.
I open the floor back up to Tom. Tom, continue your wrap up.
Okay, it's a sexually transmitted disease.
Well, so it's they're raping everybody, right? Is there other than raping being a terrible, terrible thing?
Yeah, that was horror
that's
in the 70s.
Point. It's nobody else talk.
Nobody else talk.
Going inside
nobody else talk.
Oh goodness! Can we move on?
So that's okay. So anyway, so Cronenberg made these really weird movies. I mean, these other guys made, Carpenter made exploitation movies that we give more credit to because of his style. He was like a Hitchcock devotee, right? He's the evolution of the Hitchcockian style, or. Romero made politically minded zombie movies, right? And, Craven was just doing
Survivor.
Straight up exploitation films, I suppose. But they were creative, I suppose, it's whatever he brought to them. And then you had Cronenberg, but Cronenberg was the guy who seemed to be aiming for your head. He was trying to engage you with his concepts, and he wanted you to think about what you were seeing, what it meant and all this. So it wasn't just a visual, experience of, this guy goes here and goes here and then this happens to him. And, there was more to it than just the plot. It's he's laying on all these really thick ideas in each of his movies. And I think, as I said earlier, trying to illustrate these abstract concepts with literal, illustrations. Did I just say that? Illustrations?
Literally. Anyway. Illustrations.
Yeah, so that made him interesting. When I first saw Videodrome, I remember going what in the fuck? Because I think the danger that you run with doing a movie where you're subjectively in the point of view of a character who's hallucinating is at some point I think is, you know, most of the people, because I noticed that Travis recommended this movie and I'm going to recommend this movie. We've seen it multiple times. Our first time through, you know, I'm saying my first time through, I was like, you know, because when you're experiencing it the first time through, when you have all these switchbacks and you're like, is that real? Is it not real? You go, well, I don't know if this is real or not. So then the consequences of it don't matter. And so therefore I don't feel connected to it, you know? But when you
that
watch
doesn't
it,
engage you more. That always engages me more when you don't know and you're like, holy fuck, reality is shifting. You know, it's morphing. It's, you know, that's scary to me. Right?
Yeah, but like you suggested something like that I had never even considered was that halfway through the movie, James Woods, in objective reality, that somebody else could walk into the room and see, is sitting on his fucking couch, tripping his balls out, and none of this is actually happening. Right? I've always interpreted that like, basically, we're seeing a twisted version of what actually did occur. He did go kill his, you know, his partners at the place. He does go kill the Videodrome people. He does commit suicide.
How does he do the hand grenade?
I don't know. See, that's the thing. You don't know what actually transpired.
The president of Civic TV killed his partners, then, like, blew up the southern guy?
It's everything minus the opposite view showing what's really happening.
Right, right. I think that makes it intriguing in a way that, like, it gives you stuff to, you know, I mean, that gives you stuff, it's conjecture
about,
at that point. We can sit around here and go, like, well, maybe this happened and maybe this happened. And so somehow, you know, that feeds into the experience of watching the movie. It's more in some way than just watching, you know, like, I was going to say, it's more than watching Assault on Precinct 13. Well, you know, exactly what's happening. I don't know if I'd say this movie's better than that, or better than that experience. That was probably a bad example. You know, I'm just saying it's different. So I guess, you know, I mean, my position is, it's like, at this point, I've seen it more than once because I was intrigued by what I saw. It was different enough, and I was aware that, like, this is something that, like, I mean, there's nothing else like Videodrome, right?
Right.
I've never seen a guy make out with his TV before, so yeah.
But even when I said that, like, immediately The Ring comes to my mind. It's like the idea that Ring? Videodrome
well,
is like, well, it's
the,
TV that
yeah,
kills you.
That, yeah, yeah,
well,
that,
yeah. Yeah, but it's more than
that. It's viral TV that kills you. You know what I mean? Right? I mean,
I suppose it's the execution that obviously differs.
Yeah. I mean, because that also is a movie that's making criticism about how much TV is in our lives. And, you know, I mean, I remember the scene where Rachel walks out of the balcony and looks across at her neighbors in that apartment block, and like every fucking single person is like doing nothing but watching TV. This is after she's just had a dangerous experience with television. So, I mean, they're all like these cautionary tales about watching too much TV. You know, it's somehow Videodrome was like saw the future in some way, or imagined a future at that point that in some ways has come true. And we're living in a Videodrome reality, kind of, where, like, you know, I mean, virtual reality is a thing. You know, I mean, I remember hearing that, you know, at some point somebody was talking about, like, broadcasting live, you know, like an actual execution, you know. And I don't think that was ever, I don't know how real it was or whatever, but there's always seems to be like that in the zeitgeist. Like, what if they put executions on TV? Wouldn't that be a deterrent, you know, for criminals? Like, you know, but then you got other people who would enjoy it, you know.
Just get off on it, yeah.
But the fact that they are even having conversations like that seem to be predicted by video.
Yeah.
A movie that, you know, in some weird way saw the future. I may be giving it too much credit. I don't know, but it feels that way to me, and I think that's why I like it. And I would say, yeah, definitely, you got to check out Videodrome, especially, you know, if you are fans of, you know, the stuff that it has, its offspring, its bastard children are still out there and probably will be forever. People making out with TVs and appliances. People coming out of TVs.
Making out with TVs and appliances.
Belly vaginas.
So that's Videodrome on the Saturday Night Freak Show. Next week, Jenny will be shocking us with her Christmas pick of...
All right. It is the cinematic classic that makes me laugh.
Black Christmas.
Makes me cry.
Inside.
I actually love this
Gremlins
movie. Home Alone. It's Home Alone.
Home Alone, next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, the basement is going